everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's December 2024, and you're listening to episode 425, which is a spoiler-filled conversation about the film Mary, which is streaming on Netflix. Today's guest is Cole Burgett. He is a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. Cole teaches systematic theology and Bible exposition classes and writes extensively about theology and popular culture. This is a special audio-only version of the Postmodern Realities Podcast. In other words, there is no article or review associated with this at equip.org, but we hope that you will enjoy our conversation about this film and about Christians making films and artistic works. So please join me now as I talk to Cole. Cole, it's good to have you on the podcast again.
Always good to be here. Thanks.
Well, today we're just doing a discussion of a film that has been trending on Netflix because I guess it's the holiday season, Christmas, and it's about Mary in the Bible. And it's kind of a Christmas story. I thought it was going to be more about the totality of her life, but I guess it was just the Christmas story. So I didn't realize that when I went into starting to watch it. But before we talk about the film in particular, I just want to ask Cole about this whole subject of Christians making Christian films. So as our listeners may know, we've talked quite a bit about cultural apologetics and filmmaking, and sometimes about Christians making films. Of course, we've talked most recently to Cole about Heretic, which had a spiritual theme woven into it. I don't think the filmmakers were Christian, and it was very thought-provoking about spiritual themes. Even though Christians weren't in it, per se, there were some Mormon girls in Mormon missionary girls in the movie. And we have talked in the past about C.S. Lewis recently this fall as well, and his series of sci-fi movies that do communicate his Christian worldview. So I guess Christians who might not be as familiar with the arts and filmmaking and how faith would apply in that realm, I'd like to ask Cole, does it seem like there's a difference? For me, anyway, it seems like there's a difference between Christians making Christian topic films, like some of the films in the past about, they wanted it to be about prayer or be about marriage. It seemed very heavy-handed, like there was a specific, for the better, lack of a better word, sermon kind of point that they were trying to get across or something that they wanted to say, versus creating a piece of cultural artifact or artwork or something that really flowed out of their worldview, which is something I would think of as Narnia or Tolkien's universe in The Lord of the Rings, and even C.S. Lewis, as we talked about, his sci-fi series, although that seemed a little bit more, you know, pointed than some of these more modern filmmaking studios that are finding, oh, religious films do well, so let's make a film about religion. Is there a difference in how the subject matter might come across in those kinds of films or books?
I think so. You're also going to have to deal with intent in any discussion like that. And I do think what we've seen over the past century are just cultural shifts, institutional, and then individual shifts as well, that have made things like C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, figures like that, are fewer now than they were before. And they're for my money, there are just some real practical reasons for this. The first is just secularization. Western culture has become more secular over the past century, with with organized religion playing less central of a role in both public and intellectual life. So this makes anything with explicitly Christian themes less popular or even just accessible. It's less accessible in mainstream art and literature. The entertainment industry tends to prioritize commercially safe projects over deeply intellectual or overtly religious works.
And is that because there wasn't really an entertainment industry, maybe, as we know it now with all the PR versus,
right. Well, exactly.
They call it Oxford University, you know, after World War I or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the entertainment industry, and I, you know, without making this a wholly separate discussion, you know, there is a reason the likes of George Lucas and Steven Spielberg don't really do too much in the industry today. You know, these were the guys who sort of built what we would think of as the modern blockbuster. And for a very long time, they bemoaned what the industry was turning into, which was less about these sort of, it's just kind of like what we talked about when we covered Alien Romulus. It's this policy of risk aversion that now dominates these major studios, which is how you have 150, 200, 250, $300 million projects on really, you know, not necessarily to say creatively bankrupt, but on the safest, most non-risk properties out there. And, you know,
we call that intellectual properties, like something did well. I mean, you mentioned Lucas, that, like you said, it would be a different thing. But when he came up with Star Wars, it was out of, I feel like, and maybe, you know, I'm not a film, you know, I wasn't a film major or anything, but more of a wonder of the tale versus the kind of industry it's become into churning out, whether it's action figures or the next series, because they think, it'll do fine.
There's a reason George Lucas is not still active in Hollywood, at least in the capacity he used to be today. And I mean, you can find interviews with Lucas from the 80s, 90s that I've watched, where he talks about the rise of the studios, which he always sort of had this legendary, you know, friction with, but sort of explaining that there will be a handful of studios that sort of will rise to prominence and will dominate the creative landscape. And sort of what he, to use the word prophesied, is that the studio system would eventually have to collapse before filmmaking could be exported back into the hands of creatives. And it's really sort of fascinating to hear him talk and then fast forward 30, 40 years from when he was making those statements and go, he hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly where we are. And so the entertainment industry now tends to prioritize these safer projects. And so stories with something like a Christian theme might be seen as niche rather than universal. And you also have to account for the fragmentation of audiences. In Lewis and Tolkien's time, their works reached broader audiences because they operated in less fragmented media landscapes. Today, audiences are divided across different platforms and genres, and it makes it harder for any one voice, let alone a Christian voice, to achieve the same kind of cultural prominence as the likes of a Lewis or Tolkien. Many Christian creatives are now confined to producing content for a predominantly Christian audience, which limits their cultural reach. And this can lead to this sort of self-reinforcing cycle of creating works that are less appealing to secular audiences. I won't name the name, but I know a very prominent Christian author who at one point in his career began to branch out of doing the Christian stuff and began dabbling in thrillers. But because the individual had consistently published with Christian publishers, it was a very, very hard sell for him to get his more mainstream works out there, which were award-winning books. I mean, this guy is a national bestseller, has won many, many awards. But he and I were having a conversation once, and this always stuck out to me because I was still pretty young when we were talking about this, and I was trying to figure out my own, you know, way of navigating this landscape as a storyteller, that kind of thing. And I'll never forget, he told me, he said, the biggest mistake I ever made was publishing exclusively with Christians. And this guy is a committed Christian. He said, in hindsight, I would never have done that because it has pigeonholed me so, so badly. And it was a years long cutting of the cord from the exclusively Christian publishers to get his books on shelves in Barnes and Noble in front of, you know, general audiences and things like that. So you also have that you have to contend with. There are things like the decline of Christian intellectualism. There was a stronger presence of Christian intellectuals and academics engaging with culture at a high level. Today, that whole intellectual tradition seems really diminished from or disconnected from.
If we're thinking about, and we, it's funny that so many Christian, you know, academics are studying the Inklings and the whole, you know, group of C.S. Lewis and Tolkien from, you know, basically a century ago now, because it was after World War I, is that kind of life of the mind isn't as prominent, I think, not just with Christians, but in general, like you were mentioning, culture. So are we, you know, things that have intellectual heft, like spiritual matters, do they become trivialized and propagandized maybe even to make a point? And I think this is important for our listeners to think about before we talk about what is this film that we're going to talk about, because I just want to talk about excellence in of Christians making thought-provoking artworks, whether it be novels or films. And I think they're thinking, well, there is a huge market to tap into that we, for instance, on this podcast with Cole, we've covered The Chosen. But I think because of that, and as we mentioned, Lucas, the bottom line isn't necessarily on the actual thing that's being made, but how could this appeal to as many people as possible? And then the whole vision gets watered down, maybe?
Yeah. You know, there are, without even touching the philosophical challenges that go into this, so things like cultural relativism or post-secularism, but without even really getting any into that, I think one of the other, you know, big things that you have to reconcile is the decline of classical education. Lewis and Tolkien were steeped in classical literature, philosophy, theology, which deeply, deeply informed their creative output. Modern education just does not have that same emphasis, leaving many creatives without the sort of rich intellectual foundations that supported a lot of those early figures. There are, you know, a million reasons I think you could sit and speculate about regarding the reasons for this general decline in Christian creativity. But you also have to look at the market, and we are very much a market-based entertainment industry now, and you have to know where you can sell something. So, I mean, when I'm working on films with my small team, it's an international team, when we are looking at a movie to fund or a movie to do, or we're looking at a script or something like that, we are regardless of how good it is. I mean, I'll be the first one to admit this. Regardless of how good the thing is, the first question we always ask is, can this sell? Can a distribution company pick this up? Will a distribution company even want this? I mean, we have some, what I would consider really, really good scripts lying around, but they don't fit neatly into an easily distributable log line. There's no good elevator pitch for that story. And so even though the script may be good, the truth is it's going to sit at the bottom of a slush pile, because we know that it's going to be a much harder sell to a distribution company to put this movie out there. And so when you're talking about, you know, Christian, specifically Christian intellectual properties and things like that, part of what we see now in the entertainment industry is this real broad desire for, if you do something Christian, you almost have to make it, to use your word, that kind of propaganda level stuff, because that's the kind of thing that can easily sell, because there's a built-in audience for that. You know exactly who you can market to. And simply knowing who you can market to, it tells you what kind of budget you can have. It tells you the likelihood of it finding an audience among a certain demographic or population. And it's unfortunate. It's frustrating as a creative that in a lot of ways that is where we are in terms of the entertainment industry today. That being said, I also understand that if you're trying to make a living in said entertainment industry and not be the stereotype of the starving artist, you kind of just have to learn to play ball or get out of the way. I mean, I could go on about this, but that's kind of my general thoughts on it.
The end of the year is right around the corner, and tomorrow is Christmas Eve. So Merry Christmas to you and yours and your family and friends, and a very happy new year as you ring in 2025 next week. But because it's the end of the year, I know a lot of people are thinking about year-end donations to some of their favorite nonprofit organizations and Christian organizations. And I hope this year has been a really encouraging and educational and equipping time with our podcast, Postmodern Realities, and also our new podcast, which is Christian Research Journal Reads. But Postmodern Realities has given you 53 episodes this year. That's more than one a week, actually. And we hope you've enjoyed our content, and every single one of those episodes have been just really fascinating conversations I felt with all of our writers. And you've also received all of those different articles for free at our website, equip.org. And so we hope that you would consider a partnering gift with us this year, because we continue to obviously think that our writers, who are excellent, deserve to be paid. It's not free for them to write for us, because we think that the work that they put in, the research that they do, is worthy of remuneration. So we do remunerate them. We have a budget. We have editors editing this podcast, and just all the content that we're bringing you, which is completely free. I mean, the Christian Research Journal, about 18 months ago, transitioned to a free online publication. There's no longer any subscriptions. Normally, a subscription in the past would have been $33.50. So that might give you an idea of, if you've appreciated the content this year, something that you can think about. Just think of maybe, hey, as the new year starts, I'm going to skip a few of my coffees for the month, or eating out or something else, so that you can give us a partner gift. So thank you so much for your partnership. We just really appreciate. Now, I recognize that not everyone has the ability to give a financial donation. However, you can still help us out, and it just takes the gift of your time. And that would be to go on to particularly Apple Podcasts or wherever you might make comments, whether it's on YouTube, but it really helps on Apple Podcasts to help us with the algorithm and help more people discover our free content. So could you go on there? We've had a couple of comments and little mini reviews, like a sentence on Apple Podcasts, but not many this year. So as the year ends and maybe you are taking a break and some holiday time, would you please write us a short review about why you like to listen to the Postmodern Realities podcast. So thank you so much for your support, for your downloads, for your comments, and for just being someone who is appreciating this content, because we appreciate you partnering with us. So with that, I'm back to my conversation with Cole about Christian media, what it means to communicate a Christian worldview through artistic works, and in particular, what about this film streaming on Netflix called Mary? So I want to have all that discussion and in depth to just kind of get thoughts to give background, because I think this is really important before I ask the question that I always do, no matter what it is, because people seem to like to always point that out, especially on our different social media channels. You know, why would you watch this? Can Christians watch this? So with regard to this movie, and just also to piggyback on what Cole has said, you know, a couple of years ago, so I don't know what it is now, Netflix on just their platform. So we're talking about now people have, you know, we just don't have the three broadcast channels anymore, or four if we had PBS back in the day. You know, you have Netflix, you have Amazon Prime, and now every single channel itself, like NBC, they have Peacock. It's only exclusive content there as well. We have Max, formerly HBO Max, you know, everything, Showtime, FX, Hulu. So it's almost this proliferation of, and I want to use this word properly. You know, when we talk about porn on the internet, it's like you can never see everything that there ever is for the people who are addicted to that. And that, you know what? Actually, that's true for anything. If you are a fan of sports now, because there's so much, you can't see everything that you could ever see. You can't see that if you are somebody who loves knitting. There's so many knitting people out there on TikTok, on all the social media. You can't follow them all. You can't consume all their content. So just Netflix alone, 2 years ago, had 6,200 individual TV shows or movies. That's just one platform. That is overwhelming. So when you think about that, and so I also think the reason why we cover certain things like this movie, Mary, is it was trending. It was in the top 10 a couple of weeks ago, is it rose to the top. I'm sure Netflix probably has more than 7,000 titles now, and it's risen to the top. So as people, you know, look through everything that Netflix can suggest to them, it suggests to them this movie, or they say, oh, I want to watch the top 10 movies. So that's why I want to ask you this question again, even for Christian content, can Christians watch this? Although just brief background before we get into the movie, in case people don't know, this is a film made by a Roman Catholic filmmaker with his particular theological lens on it. But is this something that Christians should watch? And it's probably suggested to them in the algorithm because they know, hey, this person's a Christian, or they only watch PG content. So let's suggest this. So is this valuable for a Christian to watch, or a non-Christian, or anyone, in terms of the discussion that we just had, in terms of good content?
I mean, I don't think it's a particularly harmful film. Do I think it's necessarily a good film? No, not at all. I think the reviews bear that out as well. Kind of like we were talking before, it seems like it dropped out of the top 10 fairly quickly as well. And so it only recently came out a couple of weeks ago. So I think it probably came out and made a splash with the intended audiences. People of faith, largely I would say Catholics. I can't imagine, you know, that there are too many Protestants who are, you know, chomping at the bit to press play on a movie called Mary. But I think it probably was viewed by the intended audience, the people who would watch something like this. And once they've seen it, it was probably ended with a shoulder shrug, and then a getting on with their lives. So do I think it's a movie that Christians can watch? Yes. Are there worse movies that Christians can watch? Absolutely. Are there better movies that Christians can watch? You betcha. So as far as it being good Christian content, you know, I'm not necessarily going to say that this is an intellectual powerhouse of a Christian movie. However, it's certainly a film that I think is fairly harmless. I can't see this movie holding the interest of anybody who is seriously going to sit down and try to watch a compelling, I hesitate to even say biblical movie, because it's about as biblical of a movie as The Passion of the Christ is a biblical movie, in that they both deal with things that happen in the Bible, but a biblicist's lens into the text or into the narrative is not the dominant means of getting into said narrative. This is a Catholic movie. That is to say, it is made by a Catholic filmmaker. Its structure is lifted in part from the Apocrypha, which we can talk about. And even though it deals, kind of like you said, with just the events of the Christmas story, the text's lens is not the lens that the movie is interested in taking into that story. It is interested in taking I don't want to say obsessive, but it's certainly an infatuatory biographical take of someone who is very, very obsessed with Mary.
I would say it's a little bit on the hagiography side, kind of. And I say that because the review of the book from the Roman Catholic publication, the National Catholic Register, said like Catholics should watch this with caution because they did not like it either. And one thing that review told me too, that, and this is what happens when this kind of ecumenical approach is taken. So the script, they note, went through lots of rewrites and they consulted Christian, Jewish, and Muslim leaders. Well, Jewish and Muslim leaders are going to have a very different view of Mary, even in a hagiography. So I think they found it like they're not recommending that Roman Catholics, and it's not a thing against Roman Catholic content. I mean, J.R.R. Tolkien was Roman Catholic, and everybody, even non-Christians, have just been enamored with his entire body of work, but in particular, you know, all of the stuff that comes out of Middle Earth, and definitely his Christian worldview was in it, but it makes it weaker, I think, when people are trying to, and that's why I say propaganda in a sense. It's like they start with something that they want to tell you. Instead of like really exploring that, they just are so have this heavy burden that by the time everything's done by committee, it turns out to be a weaker product. And that's what I think. So they have, you know, even the National Catholic Register said, this is like, where's the Bible in this story? So they said there's so much creative license taken with, you know, the dialogue, the story, the history, which is not accurate. And this is speaking by Roman Catholics reviewing a Roman Catholic movie. So I would just say, I don't think it's that great of a movie. Just, you know, take away the subject matter that's religious. We're Christians looking at this. I just don't think it's that great of a movie personally.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't think it is. The trouble there is if you try to play the game of, okay, well, what would a better version of this movie be? Well, the better version of this movie would never have gotten made. And that's, I think, part of the point that we're making here.
And that's true for this movie, for Star Wars, for
exactly.
The Marvel Universe.
Exactly.
Because when you get the executives involved, or let's
buy
a movie, ask Muslims what they think. What should we ask Jewish people what they don't like about how they're portrayed? Then it turns into
any edge that the story could have, any edge of a point that could be found is sanded in favor of trying to appeal to what in the entertainment industry, again, fits within a perceived market demographic. I mean, this is the sort of the age old idea that studio executives are so out of touch with where general audiences are, even though they claim to be the champion of the general audience. And, you know, as far as, it's an interesting discussion to have, because as far as something like Star Wars goes, Star Wars by and large is critic proof. It doesn't really matter how bad the movie's going to be. It's still going to make $1 billion at the box office, regardless of the reviews, regardless of the audience perception. People are still going to turn up for that. But these types of movies, these smaller, more religiously minded, you know, the great irony to me is that in being the result of an industry that functions in the way that it does, it ultimately ends up isolating it what should be its biggest audience. We sort of saw the same thing happen with that show, Mrs. Davis, where I think I said on that one, I have never seen a show work so deliberately to isolate the kind of people who would turn up and watch it with interest. And a lot of these religious films tend to come across the same way, which is why, you know, there are a million Christians that I know who wouldn't even be bothered to waste their time with this movie. Not because they have, you know, some axe to grind against Catholics or anything like that, just because the trailer alone looks so mind-numbingly stupid, cliched, and safe, that you sort of roll your eyes and go, I have better things to do.
I also feel like it stole a little bit from The Passion of the Christ. In other words, the one that Mel Gibson did, because it was like these demons and Satan kind of like, you know, oh, here, signpost, here they come, and they're like suggesting. So it was like that same kind of vibe. And it wasn't original to me. So it's like, oh, that movie was a blockbuster, so let's steal some things that people liked about it and insert it in here, especially as they interact with, quote unquote, Satan and Gabriel kind of things. But I do want to say, let's just kind of overview this movie. I mean, what is it about? I was surprised, actually. I thought it was going to be like The Whole Life of Mary, but I really basically got the Christmas story. I mean, her life fictionalized up to, well, based on the Apocrypha, but still, I would call it Apocrypha adjacent, and fictionalized up to kind of the birth of Jesus and going to Egypt.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what the movie's about. It's a, I guess if you're trying to fit it in a genre, you would say it's a coming of age film about Mary. And it sort of starts with the circumstances of her own birth as recounted in, I want to say it's the Proto-Evangelium of James. The Gospel of James is the apocryphal text it relies on a lot. The story sort of begins with her birth, and then it follows through to the birth of Jesus, the flight to Egypt, ultimately to presenting Jesus at the temple.
Well, in the Catholic Review, they said something that we discussed before we started this interview, and that was, seems like it's trying to reach a younger audience with this vibe that's not even historically accurate. So they talk about the film showing Joseph meeting Mary by the river, and they're just like, it's filmed like kind of a contemporary meet cute thing that's supposed to connect with younger audiences. But the way that they met and all these kinds of things is really given literal Jewish courtship and marital norms is like not even likely by a mile. So they said they're trying to connect with younger audiences, but this entire thing is absurd.
Yeah, well, that was the director's own words, is that his goal with this movie was to present Mary as a figure that contemporary audiences, particularly younger viewers, could connect with in some way. So, you know, I think we had talked sort of some about this before. I think to come into this film and to do what some reviewers and critics seem to want to do, which is talk about the historical accuracy of the thing. It is almost a fool's errand, because that is just not what the film is concerned with. The film does not care about historical accuracy. I mean, we literally have Herod stabbing his own wife to death in the first, 5 minutes of the movie, when the history of Herod's relationship and how all of that played out was endlessly more fascinating in the historical record, because there's just so much that we don't know, especially his relationship with his sister and his ultimate sickness and that kind of a thing. The history there really is stranger than fiction, and in many ways is 10 times as compelling as what's on screen, which just bludgeons you with, cliches and, the way that I say this is, look, this is a movie that has Anthony Hopkins playing King Herod. Forget historical accuracy. it's not going for that. So it makes these sacrifices in the realm of historical accuracy and things like that in order to tell the story it wants to tell, which is 100% geared to connect with younger contemporary audiences. My suspicion is that it's not going to work because even if that's sort of its intent, it still plays with these in the realm with these cliches that make it so inaccessible and make it seem so trite. And then it injects these very strange, scenes between Satan, who they call Lucifer in the movie, and Gabriel, that any type of real, quote unquote, grounded approach is gone.
In it, I mean, it was just like, and I get what they're saying, but it was just like, he addresses Lucifer, and I understand why they put that in, his brother, why are you doing this, or something like that. It's just like, this is so far afield for most of any Christian of any stripe, just mere Christianity writ large. And the other thing I want to say is, and they point this out in the Catholic Register review, it's like, the actual happenings of the Bible are strangely missing from this film, including her prayer, Mary's prayer, her song, which is celebrated by all Christians, of an example of humility. I was waiting for them to quote the Bible, and then Mary just says, "Well, let it be me." I mean, that just sounds like a tweet or some, TikTok post or something. I mean, I didn't know where the Bible was in this, and honestly, even the National Catholic Register said all the events of Luke are strangely missing. And even in the accounts of Herod and the shepherds and all this stuff and the wise men, all of that seemed like the whole entire film seemed that like they didn't even use the Bible as one of the sources.
Well, I mean, I think to try to come at the film through the lens of either historical accuracy or biblical fidelity is to miss the point of what the film is doing. That's just not where the director is. At no point in any interview that I read with him did he sit down and talk about wanting to tell a story which gets audiences to revisit the text of Scripture. I mean, sometimes when you see movies like this, the director at least has the humility to say, well, this is an adaptation. The goal is to drive the person to that actual text itself so that they can discover it and blah, 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 blah. Never once did he say that. What I did see him say a lot about was wanting people to connect with Mary. He really, really wanted people to see and understand the importance of Mary. And again, couch this in the context of him being a practicing Catholic.
But even as a character, I don't connect with her. Do you know what I'm saying? I can watch films that are totally not Christian and definitely people with worldviews I don't agree with, and yet they show a character that moves you. And, I might not agree with them, but this thing moved me. But this thing doesn't, it to me, I don't, it seemed very...
Well, you're also dealing with a middle-aged white guy making a movie about a, under 20-year-old Jewish girl and saying that he wants, you know, modern, in his words, younger viewers, contemporary audiences to connect with her. There's a sense in which the film is only going to be able to think and paint in cliches, which is ultimately going to work against it and make the character very inaccessible. And so when you take that general approach to the whole thing, and then you throw it in the blender alongside of, I think there were 74 drafts before finalization, which pulls the opinions of people all across the, you know, religious spectrum, you're going to come out with a movie that isn't going to manage to connect to anybody outside of, you know, the biggest social justice warrior on the internet. It's who you're gonna somehow manage to quote unquote connect to. Somebody who just wants to sit around and talk about how strong of a character Mary is in this portrayal, when anybody else is looking at it going, "You're kidding me?" That doesn't come through at all. If anything, it comes across as very safe and very watered down and very confused in its identity and not saying anything to anyone in particular. So when you're looking at how the thing was made and the people who put it together and how they put it together, you know, to expect a movie that's going to come out and actually say something outside of the most basic and obvious thing, it's like asking for a miracle. It's not going to happen.
Well, I also don't understand why, if the intent is to show the realness of a biblical character, why people of specifically Muslims would be help write the script, you know, not just anybody, but Muslims, religious Muslims. And also, I am surprised that they, and even I'm surprised that all the people involved, and I don't know, are they just maybe nominally religious? Even, I mean, people can be nominally religious and go to church all the time. And you can meet them and realize I don't know if they really believe this. I mean, you know, and so I say that because this Mary in this film, I was expecting it, like, again, to show her almost in a saintly way, very high way, but she just seems like an impetuous teenager. And reading the Bible myself, I just am very humbled by her whole posture. I'm humbled by Joseph's posture, and that doesn't come through at all in the film. It just, again, to quote them, it comes across as this, like, this meet cute type of thing. And he sees her and says, "I want to marry her." That's not even how marriages were arranged in the day anyway. And also, just again, leaving out the very words of scripture that they could have put in there is head scratching to me. So, like you said, maybe people of other religions objected to the words that were used by the Mary in the Bible, but it's really the Bible story and it's missing, curiously.
Yeah. And I think as far as the portrayal of Mary, I mean, I think you're right. You're saying, you know, she sort of comes across as this impetuous teenager. The problem, I think, is if you sat down and had said conversation with the people who put the movie together based on what they have said in interviews with different Catholic outlets and things like that, based on what they have said, I think that they would go, well, yeah, that's the point.
This is a good movie. So I don't know.
Right. Cause you're
done what they were setting out to do. And maybe they're trying to make her like a conservative, like feminist, I don't know, girl power. At the end, she's like taking the reins and she's rescuing them, not Joseph. I mean, the whole thing is almost like superhero stuff at the end.
I know. It's so goofy. I suppose, you know, people could watch the movie and not be, you know, if you're not really thinking about it, you wouldn't be horrendously offended by it. I think it's so non-committal in any one direction, and it plays everything so safe that it's a relatively harmless film. It's just goofy. It's so goofy. I think when we first were talking about it and one of us sent the trailer or something. I mean, it's like eye roll inducing. we were groaning through the trailer. So, and as far as the, again, the portrayal of Mary, you know, how else is DJ Caruso going to believe that a quote unquote, you know, young adult girl connects with, you know, contemporary younger audiences rather than being an impetuous teenager, because that makes her quote unquote relatable. And you know, I mean,
again, I think that shows the shallowness of where we are culturally to me, because honestly, teenagers, middle schoolers are very much drawn in either or even younger by Narnia, by Lewis,
right,
or by Middle Earth, not necessarily some of the newer, you know, variations of taking, you know, slivers of something mentioned and creating something like the new anime film. That's
right.
Out.
And that therein lies the real offense, right? It is the realization that, oh, okay, so this is actually how we're going to perceive that all quote unquote young women are, that they are this cliched and they are this trite, and that they only connect with stories that do this weird empowerment thing. That therein lies the real offense to the whole thing. That this is sort of the idea of, well, this is the kind of movie we have to make in order to find an audience. And the target audience, according to the people who made it, you know, I mean, he literally said, I wanted to inspire particularly younger viewers regarding the character of Mary. So,
it's,
you know,
it's been heavy-handed to me in a way. And also, you know, I don't think Lewis, V.S. Lewis, all those years ago, almost a century ago, was trying to think through the target audience.
Bingo.
Narnia. When his main character, as it opens in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, is a little girl. And she is the one who goes through the wardrobe. And she is the one, you know what I'm saying? He wasn't thinking, well, how do I empower girls in World War II to see that they can take risks or understand adventure or any of these things? They just started with their Christian worldview, and I'd like to tell you a story. And I think that's the same thing for Tolkien too. I mean, he did create very strong female characters, and it wasn't based on, I need to reach a demographic, which, as we said at the beginning of this podcast, seems so much for every single piece of content that's coming out. And then if something original comes out that resonates with everybody, then suddenly everybody copies that. And
yeah,
then it's not really flowing out of their original artistic, you know, creative work.
Right. I mean, this is the tension that anybody who wants to go into the entertainment industry today is going to have to deal with. So one of the classes that I'll teach with high schoolers, particularly seniors, it's an upper class elective, is creative writing. And I have built that class very intentionally so, to bridge the gap, because we will begin the class sort of saying, okay, you know, write what you want. Here's your, you know, your canvas. You create the story you want to create. And then by the time you get to the end of the year, what I've tried my level best to do is to shape them into people who are actually going to be able to take a portfolio to an agent and hand that to an agent so that they can actually get a job doing what they want to do. And the hardest lesson for them to learn is that you may have this really great well of creative energy. That's fine. You can write those stories. But if you don't write what's going to sell, or if you don't write something that's going to compel you to an agent or a manager or something like that, you're just wasting a lot of white paper and a lot of, you know, ink and 12-point font. You can do that, and more power to you. But if the goal is to make a living at this, and you're starting out as a nobody, as unknown from anybody else on the street, you know, it's at some point you're going to have to, you know, pay your dues like everybody else. And you're not going to be able to just write what you want. You're going to have to learn to navigate the business world just a little bit. And you're going to have to learn to write what sells. And finding a happy medium between what the story that you have that you want to tell and then understanding that this is what's going to not only get an agent to look at you, but to get them to want to go and fight for whatever you've created, because they understand that there is an audience out there who is going to pick this up, and that's where they're going to make their money. You have to do that. And this is just where the industry is.
And I think, unfortunately, what's happened is because there's not really good creative things from Christians or otherwise, what is getting all the buzz is excellent remakes of characters that have already existed, whether it's like the Penguin on HBO. We're not necessarily recommending any of these, by the way, or Shogun, which was a hit back in the 1980s on NBC, that kind of thing. It's all kind of people like, hey, oh, that was successful in the past. Let's just make a good thing now. But stories are important that we've talked about. And so the reason why I have this conversation is because in the 21st century, how do you do Christian apologetics? It's less because people are not as intellectually robust as they had been in times past, because we've moved more from the written word to more visual society. I think we can all agree that visual is where we're engaged these days, on video, on social media, etc., on the internet. And people don't have the margin or even the patience, I think, to read long books and interact with them. I don't know if most people are just watching Lord of the Rings. I don't know if they've actually read the book.
Read the books, right. Yeah, this gets into, I think, a larger discussion of just general illiteracy across the board, which, you know, of course has everything to do with the Bible. I mean, this is the first conversation I have with my high schoolers and my college students is, if you don't like reading, I don't know what to tell you, because Christians are people of a book. So, you know, sure, listen to it however you want to do it. But if you don't like words on pages, it's going to be real hard for you to be any sort of committed and faithful Christian, because this is how the word has been preserved. And the general expectation is that, yeah, you're going to read it. And if you're in my class, then the only way you pass is if you read it. And what this has gotten us into, from a broad scale, is a general illiteracy across the board, that affects not just our ability to read, period, but our ability to read and comprehend the Bible, especially. I mean, the number of conversations that are had consistently with the English department because of the widespread lack of literacy. And it reaches its tentacles into not just the Bible classes, not just the English classes, but the history classes as well. And it is a growing problem. It is a growing problem, not just in America, but in Western culture in general. And I think you're absolutely right. What this looks like talking about the entertainment industry is, you have people who have watched The Lord of the Rings, but would die before they can be bothered to pick up one of the books. And so you haven't actually read The Lord of the Rings. You've watched Peter Jackson's adaptation of it, which is very good and deserved the awards that it won.
I don't think it's the same thing, though.
It's not.
I mean, when you read, or at least for me, and I don't want to say, okay, well, I'm biased, I was an English major, but when you read, which I didn't read until I was an adult, I'm not sure why, the whole Lord of the Rings, because I'm a big sci-fi and fantasy person. The terror, I mean, the actual, I feel like the terror of the orcs, the terror of the spider Shelob, all of that is more visceral in the books for me. Like, it's pretty scary, don't read it at night, than watching the CGI orcs come out. And so I just recommend it. I would say, for the Christian apologist, for me, my takeaways, if you go back, especially after you see Mary, and then you go back to Luke chapter 1, you just say, this is a complete injustice of the film. Because what is said here, what is said about even her visit to Elizabeth, I thought the visit to Elizabeth, I don't even know what that was. It seems so not even close to the Bible, is that you would do better to have someone, you know, and maybe it could be a springboard. Did you see that movie, Mary? Let's read Luke 1 together, because Luke 1, there is so much there. Mary's Magnificat is so beautiful and moving, and definitely not on the same level of in the film, Let It Be Me. That's just not even close to how Mary expresses her humility in Luke chapter 1. So I would just say stick with the Bible this Christmas season. Definitely it's not a family film I would recommend, just because I don't think it's all that good. And there are too many, frankly, just campy scenes.
Yeah, that's, I think, a good place to leave it.
Well, I hope that you have had some food for thought as we've talked about what does it mean to be a Christian and have a Christian worldview, and even a Christian who wants to work in the arts, and how would your art impact your faith and getting the Christian story out there, whatever that looks like through your own work, even as we've had you ponder Tolkien and Lewis. So on a much more of a fun question for Cole, because it is right before Christmas and New Year's, Cole, do you do anything ring in the new year in a specific way? Or do you like to watch the ball drop? Do you watch the ball drop in?
Sometimes. It sort of depends on how tired I am.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities Podcast.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 425 from the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was frequent contributor Cole Burgett, and we have had a conversation about the Netflix film Mary, which is currently streaming on that platform. There is no article associated with this podcast, so we hope you have enjoyed our conversation. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.